Welcome to episode 5 of On Tap with Steve and Brian. Lots to talk about. We've been absent for a solid week and a half, more than that.
Yeah, you have.
So we left after the icebreaker. Yeah, I have. Left after the icebreaker and returned today.
Yep.
To the racetrack. Brian's been here. He did trash again, like we've talked about in episodes.
No possum.
Yep, here doing trash. So we've got a chance to kind of recap a lot of stuff. There's things going on personally, actually on track right now.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to hear in here. But everybody, I don't think you hear it, but it's pretty loud. I think the race is going on as we speak.
It didn't sound like you could hear it on the audio, so hopefully it's not upsetting the broadcast, but definitely modifieds here. The Zach Brewer Memorial is coming up March 1st. Got through the icebreaker. Once the icebreaker gets here and goes, it's on from there. So I left Sunday, headed to Florida. Owen raced Auburndale all week. Spent the week down there, had a great time, enjoyed racing with him. We talked about it with Mike the last episode that I enjoy, good, bad, or indifferent, which we had all of that down there with Owen.
First time he was there, right? Because it was at Citrus County before.
Yeah, it was at Citrus County, but he was in a Bando also. First time in a Legend car.
Right.
So all of that kind of played in. We went into the Charger class. Probably should have run Young Lions. Charger wasn't really built for us. A lot of the kids had speed, but when it became racecraft, that's when we lost control. And then poor Owen found himself in some spots. Leading coming to Checkers. Race one, got dumped. And then after that, it was just a little bit of everything.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure, the second part of last year, Owen, you made the move for him to jump up to Legends to get some seat time and get familiar with that racecraft. But a lot of them kids, that was probably their first time racing at Legends.
Yeah. So as I said, we kind of screwed up on the going to Chargers, which is fine. But had a good week. Enjoyed. We took the camper down there. Had a good time at Camp Margaritaville, which was awesome. Met some cool people in the Monroe family that Owen was racing against Bristol, and I think that's the camaraderie that we talked about in racing in general. Is it's so much fun to go down and just have a good time.
Oh yeah,
So whether Owen moves forward or not, we might just put a kid in a Legend or Bando so we can go to Florida.
Just a party. Yeah, yep. I was getting instantly jealous every time you were calling and talk about it. See what's going on. You were telling me, you should see this place. Pretty cool. Well, no, I'm still just see this trash can, but it's okay.
Yeah, no big deal.
Yep.
No possum. How's your beer? You enjoying
the cold?
You enjoy
something about cold beer and
make
sure
your
lips quiver.
The one thing that it was not down there was cold. Mm. When I stepped up here, it's back to being cold. But down there it was like 87, 88 degrees.
It got pretty brisk here last week. Yep.
But the Daytona 500 happened. Congratulations to Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Junior Motorsports.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited for them.
Allgaier had a great race. I mean, watching him, we were watching him very specifically, obviously. But watching his go to the back, stay out of trouble, get back in the middle, go to the back, come to the front. That whole race is tough.
It's survival nowadays.
It's just crazy. I've never been a fan. I feel like the winner, end of day is all about luck. Where you were, proven. William Byron was, eighth coming to Checkers?
Yeah, I think
so. And ended up winning the thing. So, it's just a matter of strategy. And, I hated to see, number one, as soon as the race started, poor Trent Owens, who comes out here and he crew chiefs for Cody Kelly, helps out with Bobby June. He went ahead and blew a motor with A.J. Allmendinger.
He's on Allmendinger's car. Mm-hmm. I knew he was with Colleague. I didn't know whose car he's specifically
with A.J.
on.
And during all the rain delay stuff, they interviewed him, and they thought they had a good car, and then green dropped, and all of a sudden the motor blew.
Yeah,
so it's kind of frustrating to spend all offseason, I'm sure.
Like you say, in the rain delay, just sitting there waiting. Oh, we're going to be excited, and then can't even get ended before it even gets started.
Well, and I can tell you right now, so I feel, we've talked about this in all of our podcasts, Ultra Broadcasting was a thing. We haven't really had a chance to talk about it since its inception, but I was proud of the product we put out.
Yeah.
I think everything we said it was going to be, it was. But with that being said, what I'm talking about is now I see things different. So when you're watching Daytona and they get that rain delay, like I was driving home listening to MRN coming from Florida, and it's so hard for radio to try to fill time. And at some point they finally quit and said, they made a comment. They said, local broadcast, get ready, it's coming back to you. And then how do you come back from that? And then, like I said, the TV side, when do you start switching over? It's crazy. And they've caught a bad break for the last handful of years. It seems like every time they go down there, Daytona 500 is under rain delay.
Saw someone said, just reschedule this race. Move it up a week. Don't move it up a week. That affects us.
Don't move it up.
I didn't even imagine that aspect of it. The radio would be tough. Yep. To fill that time. Like TV, at least you have the graphics and you can show some things and some reruns, or radio, like they're just live the whole time.
Which I think you and I have talked about is that I think radio probably is the most impressive because they have to create. It's like old school. It's like back in the 50s and the 40s and 50s when radio was the only thing and they had to tell you the story.
Yeah.
These guys are making you visualize in your brain what it looks like while they're watching it. You know, they had Steve Post obviously on Pit Road and they had all of the announcers, and they had their turn one, their turn three, their pit road guys. And, man, they just make you feel like you're watching it while you're listening to it.
Oh, yeah, and they do such a good job. Like, he knows exactly when to end, and the next guy picks right up.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're so fluid with everything.
There's so many moving parts to that. Now, mind you, that they've been doing it a long time.
Yeah, that's right.
And they've got all the pieces to do that. But it's fun. Like I said, the broadcast stuff, I've always enjoyed parts of it. And I'm starting to learn it, and now I'm watching things a little bit different as we move into the exciting news that we had from last week while I was in Auburndale with Owen. Figured out how to get Lakeview Motor Speedway on board with Ultra Broadcasting. So Ultra Broadcasting now is going to cover all of the Lakeview Motor Speedway races. So we'll have us. We've got a few Anderson races in South Carolina that we're going to be announcing. As well as obviously the Southern National events.
The Speed Week. I mean, it's a whole week worth of stuff. Yep. Yeah.
So Ultra Broadcasting, making moves. We're trying to just keep it to the point where if you ever subscribe, you have all the things that you're you have all the things at your fingertips that you want to watch. We're working on. I was on the computer today. The apps will be available shortly. We're working hard to get that back up, or not back up, but just up. So a lot of cool stuff, man. It's just it was a crazy week. Icebreaker was nuts to get into.
The broadcast was good. I mean, to the radio point, when you said Steve Post, I actually found myself trying to race direct the race, but hearing him over there in the corner announcing, I was just like, oh, there he is right there. I hear that voice all the time on the radio, and there he is right there.
Yep.
Oh, let me get back to what I was doing. Sorry.
Yep. But I thought the event in general, because obviously for both of us, like we talked about, is that we've kind of figured out a way to, which we've always been good at, working hand-in-hand, you and I. But you did a great job on making sure that the race itself, like with the flow of everything, how we got through. I mean, we got through all that in, 4 hours,
figured? Yeah, it was pretty quick,
Like between qualifying.
I mean, we could take credit, but at the same token, we got to pay a lot of respect to the competitors and teams. I mean, these guys really help us out. Like, even the pit road, you just look at the limited space we have, and, like, this is going to be a traffic jam. And these guys just work with us, and they don't complain about it too much or whatnot. They meet us in the middle, and that's what we need.
Yep. So, like I said, I thought the event in general went well. I thought the race altogether went pretty good. Had a couple hiccups with some couple.
Yeah,
cautions.
We went out of the first two races caution free with the limiters in the trucks, and then lap five and late miles. And I even said to Spotter, I said, "All right, guys, let's not do this." Lap five, we already had a caution, first caution of the day in the third main event. I said, "Let's just calm down. We're going to get to the end." And I don't know if the spotters relayed the message, but it definitely set the tone. Everyone calmed down a bit.
Yep. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch Doug's video. I think the only kind of like out of the box situation we had was Connor Hall and Doug Barnes spinning out into one and two.
I think Doug took a little bit of the blame there too. I think they're fighting for the same piece of real estate, and that was just past halfway. So that's where track position is pretty pivotal. Like, you got to start making some moves at that point. Connor stalled it off in there, and Doug kind of crowded him. So I mean, I think it was kind of to each his own.
Yep. Which, again, goes back to our battle of racing incident versus not racing incident.
Well, I'm happy to see anybody wreck, but I was happy that they both spun out. And they both came to pit road. I said, I ain't got to worry about putting one to the back.
Right, yeah.
Like, they're both involved. They both came to pit road, abandoned their positions.
Yeah, you didn't have to make that decision. But, overall, it ended up good.
I will say one thing to that. Sorry. So, the good thing about the Ultra Broadcasting, and Paul was doing an amazing job, is the replays.
Oh, yeah.
So, we had some guys come down pit road, and I came on the radio and told everybody, I said, we got the lineup on the track is good. I said, but the guys on pit road, we'll line back up behind them the way they come off. Because we allowed them to work during red flag conditions because it's more of a sprint race than anything else. So one guy just stormed the tower and was already complaining and just say, oh, well, that's, we're not supposed to be here. We're supposed to be further ahead. We were your guy at the end of pit road. And he was steady going, and Shane was, I mean, doing a good job of, like, kind of defending Maul. Because I'm watching the replay. I'm like, we're going to get you where you need to go. That's right. The benefit of what we're doing now. We can control it all. And Paul had a camera set on that, and we navigated to how it should be, and then it ended good.
Yep.
But just don't storm the tower. Just wait. Let us do our thing. If we get the one to go signal, and then you want to say something, I get it. Yep. But we were still pacing. I'm getting the lineup right. Don't worry.
So I'll tell you a funny story. So from Auburndale, I don't know what night it was at this point. It was Wednesday or Thursday. And there was a big wreck coming to green. Like, they didn't even get off of four. And the leaders somehow figured out how to almost, like, jump each other. Yeah. And so Owen misses it. And they get ready to line up, whatever. And we're standing in the grandstands. Morgan's got her little earbuds in. And we're watching the whole thing. And then they line everybody up. And this 11, it was an Otter Box, like a bright yellow car. It qualified 18th, and like we didn't even take green, so they started lining people back up, and race control put that car that qualified 18th into sixth, and it ended up costing Owen because like that guy stopped, and then Owen like hit someone.
That was the one going in three. You get it?
Yeah. So once they put it up there, but it was funnier than hell to listen to Morgan. She's like, walk towards the tower. I said, where are you going? Like, she was ready to be that person. I was going to knock on the window and be like, awesome. What the F is going on over here? This car doesn't belong here. I'm like, stand still. It's
and then
fine.
When the race director is questioning her, oh, no, we do it. Let me tell you how it should be done. That's awesome.
Yeah.
We take pride in that.
So she was all wound up. But like I said, I think the event went well. It didn't end kind of like when it was said and done exactly how we anticipated. Because when Brian and I walk out of the tower, I always joke. I'm like, all right, let me go walk down and see what I'm going to get yelled at about now.
Yeah, thank everybody for coming, but there's always some hostile crowd somewhere.
There's something that is going to be a problem. So we go down, and there was, unfortunately, Tristan McKee, which is an amazing race car driver. Matt Piercy.
For his age, yes.
Yes. Amazing, absolutely. Amazing team owner. I mean, he's so smart, Matt is. Unfortunately, this didn't meet the weight criteria that we had in place. Gave him a couple chances. Obviously, you know, we had a chance to let him go across, fill up, and it just didn't work out. Obviously, kind of similar stuff for Mike Darn down in Florida. You know, Supers had a similar situation. Theirs was above weight. Ours was below weight.
Yeah, they got a maximum left side percentage, where ours is just a weight rule, and you just got to be above that. And unfortunately, it was just – I mean, I get a couple pounds, but I think the right side was the one that came into question, so that's where the final call came. But to Mike – our official Mike Cox's benefit, they did a great job. Like, Jackie Lawson stayed right there with the car. And this always gets tough here. Like, we've talked about it before. We kind of got to enclose that area. Because once, like, one thing might become into question, it's just wide open. And then you get a crowd. And then the team itself that might be at fault, they're going to get a little bit more hostile than they need to. But an official at the same time, because you just got so many viewers watching.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, one thing I think we learned from there is there's some things we need to fix. You know, every time we have an event, I feel like we come up with something we should change. But I think end of day, pre-race is all about qualifying, right? Making sure that everyone's on the same page when it comes to qualifying. So you cross through pre-tech, like you need to be just as equal as everybody else.
That's right.
So qualifying is important for pre-tech, but post-race is really on you, right? Like, so
the work session too kind of leaves, you can't go back, you can't revert back to something and say, well, it was good here because we did allow a work session.
Yeah.
So there's some questions at what was happened there.
So it's hard for us. Like, we want to believe everyone, but we're all racers, so it's hard
to. And then we got to look at the black and white rule at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So we had a challenging second half of the evening trying to, you know, we never want to see someone go home upset, especially after a good weekend. But end of day, we've got to do what's right, right?
Yeah, I think it ended good.
No, it was fine.
Yep. I mean, Matt and Mike talked after it, and everything was good. And he's even expressed coming back through the 400 and maybe even the Sun Fun race. That's good.
So that was kind of the stressful part. But overall, like I said, the Icebreaker was a good event.
Weather, once again, knock on wood.
Oh, dude.
I mean, it's just –
Couldn't catch a better break. That was beautiful.
Well, last year we were in a window, remember? We saw it. Everybody said, you're crazy for running this. You're never going to get it in. And we saw like a five-hour window, and we attacked. We could dense practice. We could dense qualify. And I think the second round was your qualifying. And we got it in. But this one was like – it wasn't even a question. It was nice, warm. Doug talked on his video about – how track conditions, probably one of the hotter days he's been here.
Yep.
And it was in February, but it turned out really good.
And I think to the Doug conversation in episode 4, one thing I would suggest I kind of screwed up a little bit on making the subscription side, like where you can get to, everybody can get to it on our Ultra Broadcasting page. I screwed that up a little bit. So go back and definitely take a look at episode 4. I'm going to put out a chunk of our conversation with Mike Diaz when it came to the tire stuff. I know Doug was a little frustrated at tire stuff. I know a lot of people were frustrated, but it's getting to a point where the conversation has become so big mm-hmm. that they're talking into they're making it happen. Like in their brains, if the car didn't work or they say someone overdrove, it's all of a sudden it's not the overdriving in, it's the tire.
Right.
Like we slowed down, so it's got to be tire. But I think end of day, Doug ran good.
He did.
Which
we knew before we filmed that last episode that we already had a plan in place. I mean, the practice we knew was going to be kind of a free for all because we didn't guarantee anything.
Of course.
But I mean, we knew the sets, everybody was going to be on the same level playing field. Yep. And that worked out good. But yeah, that last episode is definitely worth the listen with that episode with Mike Diaz because he's put in the hours. He's actually experienced everything firsthand, the process. So it's no lack of anyone's fault.
Yeah,
I would say.
No.
Like everyone puts in the work behind the scenes. I mean, even at Hoosier. I mean, just hearing how many hours is put for each person, man and female, and what each one of them does their role in it all is, I mean, pretty spectacular.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it here a little bit more coming up out of the break. Kind of got some news on our end as far as some tire stuff that I think is going to be beneficial to our guys. So we'll talk about that as we get going. We've got some interviews to be had. This episode, especially with the modifieds being here, so we're looking.
So my audio levels are probably about to go down because I got to reposition again.
Oh yeah,
it's typically how it works here.
Yeah, so the bloopers will work.
You
out
just
well.
Stay right there, Steve. Oh, you're moving. Good. Don't worry about it.
I'm not moving, but so far, looking forward to episode 5. But we thank you guys for joining us, and stay tuned. We got some more coming up on tap. On tap with Steve and Brian, episode 5, kind of came out of the break talking a little bit about what's going on in the last couple weeks. Been a lot of interesting stuff. Again, we talked about the broadcast and its first ever episode or live event on ultrabroadcasting.com. We signed up Lakeview.
Yep.
Man, between myself, yourself, Joel, or you know, Joel, our producer here, he worked his tail off to get us internet.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure that we had the speed we were supposed to. We ran conduit. We did that. Paul came in and just knocked it out of the park when it came to the all the graphics and all that stuff and doing a good job of switching back and forth the cameras. But like I said in the first segment, I was super proud of what we put out there. I thought it was
too,
good.
Yeah. I watched it back that very night. I was so excited to watch it because we got such positive feedback.
Mm.
Like everyone that subscribed and watched, said, "Oh God, you guys did a great job!" Like yep. We were concerned about it moving forward, well, going in. But I mean, it was no concern at all. It was really good, professionally done. Yeah, Paul Burnham, which
yep. we had the whole thing,
which he corrected us. Yeah, he did it.
Well, he didn't correct us; he corrected me because
I. Well, I was trying to give you some credit here, but yeah, it was good. I mean, just the drone shot.
Yeah, the drone shot's awesome.
I mean, my God. That's not something you see all the time.
Yeah, my drone shot is usually just like hovering. This thing was chasing stuff.
And it's also somewhere back there off of turn 2.
Well,
turn
one,
three,
of, them
probably.
Is, you know, one yeah. of them. But no, like I said, I was proud of it. And going forward, we talked about it. I think it's a good asset to our business plan because, you know, being a business owner is tough in general. Being a racetrack owner is really tough. You know, our income is not exactly what people think it is. You know, they want more payout, and they think we deserve to do X, Y, and Z. And racetracks just don't make that kind of money. And I've said this for a long time. I think we're one of the only racetracks out there that's surviving as a racetrack only.
Yeah.
You know, most racetrack owners have a business that's
right.
behind it that's supporting and financially making sure that the racetrack succeeds. We just don't have that. We never have. When Myrtle Beach shut down, you and I kind of had to step back and say, you know, what are we about to do? You know, and our choices were slim, and we decided to go racing, and here we are.
And even him and Bob, it wasn't just the racetrack. Like, we were there every day for the NASCAR racing experience.
Yeah,
he also had that venture, yeah. It's tough. I mean, no doubt about it. Like, seeing the numbers and all, like, I don't know how we keep doing it, but somehow we're treading water, and we keep managing it somehow.
But I think this broadcast stuff, if we can continue to – to put out the quality that I know we can and we're going to. When we go to Lakeview, I think it's going to be a cool deal to really prove that, yes, it was on property here, and that's kind of a little bit easier for us because it's our property.
Yep.
But showing what we're about to do when we go to somebody else's land and you know, highlighting their racers and their drivers. We're working on something right now that I'll go ahead and put it out there before it even becomes a post, is we're working on a jot form where you can fill out your information between us, Lakeview, and Southern National to upload your sponsor images. We want to make sure that, you know, we might not have the flow numbers yet, but when we have viewers, we want to make sure that your sponsors get recognized, your information that you need put out there gets recognized. So stay tuned on our social platform to make sure that when it comes up, get a chance to, you know, get us your PNGs, the images of your sponsors, JPEGs, whatever it is. Yep. Get that stuff uploaded and give us information about you, what you need highlighted, because without sponsors, racetrack-wise or race car-wise, we just don't have each other. So, you know, we're going to really push on the Ultra Broadcasting side to make sure that we highlight what you need highlighted, not just what we need highlighted. Because in the day, like I said, we really want you to get sponsors, and we really want your sponsors to get the recognition they deserve.
That's right. And back to the point about Lakeview, it's one thing we always share, passion. That's something you got to have. And ever since the new ownership took place, I mean, you see the renovations they've already made for that facility. Yep. So I think them being on board is going to be great. And then you touched on Anderson might be coming on board.
Yep.
New management there too. So it's going to be really good, I think.
Yep. And Tim Clemens took time out of his day when we were trying to get this go-kart track going, because we have no idea what we're doing. And Tim Clemens with Lakeview came down, brought machines, brought stuff, and helped me work through how to till, how to water. It was super cool of him to, I mean, he doesn't have to do that. He lives down in the Conway area, and it's a long drive, but he kept coming up and helping us out. So
I do like how you said in the go-kart world, we didn't have no idea what we're doing. That's still present tense.
Yeah.
That's not like past tense. Yeah, we didn't learn it.
Yeah, we didn't. Yeah, we're still uncertain.
We started with 5-6 divisions. It ended with 18 divisions. Yeah. Like, okay, this is news to us. We'll just roll with the punches here.
But, no, super excited about what Ultra Broadcasting has to offer going forward. Not sure what it, you know, what its end goal is currently, but we just want to currently just continue to offer the best product. We're going to add podcasts. We're going to add content come March, man. So this is kind of my final thought on Ultra Broadcasting. Come March, between us, the second half of the March 1st race, the flow is going to cover the Smart Mod Tour, but everything beyond that will be on Ultra Broadcasting, as well as then we go to Speed Weeks, and we got 5 days of Speed Weeks.
Second then, race, I-95 showdown, so that'd be big.
Yep, another I-95 showdown. Then we go to 2 days, March 22nd, we'll be here at Florence for the day race, and then we'll be at Lakeview for the night race. So March alone is well worth the $24.99 subscription.
Yeah, because it came down. Yep.
Yeah. So,
so subscribe today and experience the journey with us.
Yeah. So it's really cool. Excited about being a part of it. Excited about the journey we're about to go on. But with that, we'll kind of move back on to racing and coming up. We talked about it out of the break. Some tire news. We talked about tires in episode 4 with Mike. Not really 100% sure on what all of it means as far as what this tire is versus that tire. But going forward, it sounds like the late model stocks will be on the F45 Star. It sounds like they're actually trying to eliminate the old F45. You know, for most tracks going forward. So,
and it's not beating a dead horse. Like, it was news to us this week. Like, even Steve from Welcome, the plant there in Hoosier, the warehouse, he reached out to you.
Yep.
So they're mindful too. So it's not like they don't care about it. No, everyone's mindful on it. So he's trying to migrate us over to that F45 Star, and he said that we're going to have some for practice as well as, like you said, late models into 22nd. Now the Carolina Crate will be on it.
They'll be on it. And what Steve said is he said he heard the griping. And we said this in episode 4, is that it's not that Jeff, Steve, and Summer are sitting in a warehouse going, you know what? What is the worst tire we can give them?
Right.
They want to give you the best product, but they're a business also. And at some point, we've got tires, and we can't just throw them away.
They
got
to move them.
They got to move them. And so it might suck for us, but what Brian did the other day was stack them all. So it's a fair shake for everybody. So when it was all said and done, it wasn't – nobody won or lost the other day because of tires. I don't care what they said. end-of-day trucks to late models. Somebody won because they had the best car. And then going forward, now you're going to have the F45 Star for late models. And I can promise you that I say this jokingly, but you better not complain. You wanted this, so
they will.
So when you get these tires,
this one looks too good.
Yeah,
what? Too good?
Oh, it's too fresh.
Too fresh is gonna wear out quicker. All right,
it's got this star on it. I didn't have a star before.
Like
now the star's got. We got left side weight that we didn't have in the first place.
I like a pound symbol instead of a star. Yeah. What is this? But yeah, you said late models. So our super trucks and our limited late models, like we're gonna keep those on the standard F45s.
And so tell them why.
It plays hand in hand with our Charger division. So our Charger division runs on scuff tires, and so do our Street Stocks and our Thunder and Lightning. So it would get to a weird position if we moved everything over to the F45 Star, and then as we're grading them and putting them back in our inventory as scuffs, if a Charger gets, and a Street Stock and a Thunder and Lightning, gets two of the F45 original and two of the F45 Star. So we got to play hand-in-hand and work through all the divisions, obviously.
Of course. And I think if the F45 Star turns out like we think it will, and it should be a success, then next year, everybody.
Oh yeah,
will
like
be
throughout
the
course of this year, we'll go ahead and start putting that in the inventory. So once we move, everything's moving together.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's we've talked about it numerous times. Is that the whole business of racing and racetrack promoting is challenged because we've got to think of every single division and what it means to them to do X, Y, and Z. So if we just jump ship and say we're going all F45 stars, that screws the Chargers, it screws the Street Stocks.
Now, we make a lot of mistakes, but I think our biggest perk is that we were on the other side of the fence for a long time. So we kind of know that there are gripes complaining about, so we can go ahead and fix that and have a plan in place to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Well, I think, too, once we get, like, so did the, and I'm asking, I know I should know this answer, but did the trucks leave two new the other day? Did they,
some of them
scuffs?
Did. Some of them did, yes.
So you had your opportunity to leave tires.
Yep.
So with that, once we do get into mid season, trucks and limiteds, I believe, we'll have a chance to only have to get two. So you're not going to get that mixed match of like four that you don't agree with.
That's right.
You're going to get two to go with your other two, and you'll have an idea of what you're going to do with them.
And about like everything, like each week when you buy one, I'm going to do my best I can to make sure that all 10 to 15 trucks or 10 to 15 limiteds, you're all getting the same molds. You're all getting the same barcodes, which Diaz touched on. Barcodes don't mean anything.
Yeah.
Just the molds do. The molds really do mean a lot.
Oh, I agree. But I thought it was funny when he said that in episode 4 on how if they drop a sheet, they just pick up a new sheet, and then that's the code that goes on.
You'll see
it.
That same barcode at the first three digits it starts with on an 800 tire, on a F45 tire, any tire you get, you'll see that. So you know that's not as crucial as the mold itself is. That's funny. I think some people may have watched it because you put it live that Friday, and then when people were getting, like I said, on Saturday, I know particular people and what they look for. They weren't looking at the barcode.
Yep.
Now they're looking at the molds. Oh, now you worry about the molds more. And that's funny.
Yep. So it's definitely unique, but I think the season is here. Looking forward to it came out today. Nice little video tribute to the Zach Brewer Memorial. We're coming up on that March 1st, as well as starting the season off for our mini stocks and our we've got Chargers. We said vintage.
Mini stocks, Chargers, Bell and Bell Vintage Asphalt Series, and Legend Cars and Bandoliers.
Yep. So starting our season like
in the Carolina Crate.
In the Carolina Crate. Yep. So. But, the start of the season was icebreaker. It always has been. But that's kind of, just kind of there. Like, what's that?
It's kind of
an exhibition. Exhibition.
Yeah.
So, exhibition race came and went, and now it's ready to get into season. Yep. And then from here, we start running first and third Saturdays of pretty
and
much
every
month.
And that's the reason why we don't have late models or super trucks or limiteds or any of the divisions that was here for the icebreaker race in this first points race. Because this is the points race for the Chargers and Mini Sox, Legends and Bandos. So, if you, like, we're mindful not everyone does this for a living, so if you have a few short weeks to try to get it ready and you're just going in your backyard and trying to do so, we don't want to put you in that crunch time. So, yeah, late models, super trucks, and limiteds, I think they return on March 22nd.
Yep.
But everything else that didn't race an icebreaker will be here on the 1st.
Yep. So, going to be a great time. Zach Brewer Memorial, we got a lot of cool stuff that we're working on as far as trying to honor Zach. So, for those that, I didn't get a chance to really – I spoke about it a little bit on the pre-race – but Zach and I go way back to our Richard Petty driving experience days. I've known him for a long time. Super surprised when I found out he passed. Woke up to Jacqueline kind of shaking me in bed and telling me that Zach had passed away, and it just felt unreal. Didn't make sense. similar to 2017 with Terry. You know, the whole thing. You know, it's life is short. We all keep assuming we're going to wake up the next morning. You know, Terry was at the racetrack with us, practicing with Justin. He's driving home, and, you know, all of a sudden he's been launched out of a vehicle, and I think it was 13 days later he passes away. And then Zach goes in for a routine hernia surgery and doesn't make it through it. Young man with a beautiful wife and a beautiful daughter that are left behind. And, you know, once it happened, it hurt my feelings deeply, to the point where I called everybody that was involved, and I said, we are going to have the Zach Brewer Memorial. Zach has been a person in my life for a long time, and I want to make sure that we do our best to honor him. And I promise you, and I promised Kim, his wife, that everything we do come March 1st is going to be because of him and for him. So we're looking forward to March 1st, the opening of the Modified Series and the Smart Modified Tour, and we're going to do some cool stuff. So with that, we've got some exciting people that are going to come up here. We're going to have some real talk with some modified drivers. Obviously, modifieds mean a lot to me, but just stay tuned, and we look forward to talking to one of our modified competitors here shortly. So we appreciate you joining us, and we look forward to seeing you on the other side of On Tap. All right, welcome back to On Tap with Steve and Brian. And ladies and gentlemen, joining us this afternoon, Luke Baldwin. Welcome, Luke.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, no, it's an honor. I've told you before that this is a hard-hitting podcast, so we're going to ask some serious questions. We're going to get really dive in to Luke Baldwin and who you are. So I'm going to start with question one. Who flooded the house at Martinsville?
Was it? It was not me. It was not me. I will die by that.
So
we narrowed it down, right? One of three candidates.
Well, Owen's probably the most legitimate candidate.
That's where my points are.
Based on information that I've gotten,
it's Cade.
I'm not going to say any names, but you might have just mentioned
it. It's Cade, yeah. It's Cade. Damn you, Cade! Son of a bitch.
I will die by it not being me.
So I'll tell the viewers the story. Is that so? We rent a very nice house.
Share the address because the house is.
No, we're not sharing the address because I don't want to give it up. But we rent a very nice house in Martinsville. And one of the years that I didn't make it, which is all of them,
I was sitting, it down on it.
I was sitting in the grandstands, and I get a call from the Airbnb people, and they're like, "Hey, there's water pouring in the kitchen." I got there, and it was literally coming out of every orifice of the property. Like, it was just pouring. And the lady said that someone flushed the toilet, and it was they had like put towels around it. I was like, "Son of a bitch!" And then Morgan, she's trying to blame it on people. I was like, "It's that damn Luke Baldwin."
So there was like towels around it. Like someone tried to cover it.
Yeah.
Now I definitely know it wasn't me. Cause I thought it might like. There's a slim chance that I might have done something not realized.
Yeah. So supposedly someone towelled it up like they were trying to protect it.
So this person didn't even do the Homer Simpson just back in the bushes like.
No,
oh,
they tried to stop it.
Now I feel even more confident.
Okay. All right. So you're out now, and now it's down to Cade and Owen only. So we'll have a conversation with Cade at some point. but welcome to the broadcast or to the podcast. And man, it's so cool. You've done such a good job. Congratulations on your King of Modified stuff. You know, I'm a huge fan of yours, your family. Your dad is an amazing part of racing in general, but especially in my world. You know, we all grew up in the upstate world doing modified stuff. Your grandfather was a huge part of my life as far as just being a part of the modified stuff. But man, just give everybody kind of a quick update, because I think it's impressive, you know, watching Owen do what he's doing. Like, Brian really doesn't know this, is that your first race was one of the summer shootout events, right?
Yeah, 2022. I came here for one Legend car race
month
prior, and then went to the summer shootout.
And then after that, you then just kind of jumped into everything, you know, head first.
Yeah, pretty much. I ran the summer shootout, a couple races at Riverhead, a couple more races here. I think 15 or 16 Legend car races total that year. Then I jumped in a 602 mod for the full 2023, and ran good at New Smyrna, ran decent up here, just didn't have as much success as I wanted to based on how it started, and then got lucky enough to where Hermie called me to drive 7VA on the Smart Tour last year, and here we are.
Yep. And you've done an amazing job. Like I said, every time you seem to jump into Modified, you do a great job, and you're always up front, so congratulations on that. I will say that Brian is a huge fan of your online presence.
Oh, he's a good actor, too. That Weekend at Bernie's skit. My God.
Brian sent me that video. He's like, did you see this? This is awesome.
I legit worried. I said, is Chris actually dead? Because he did a pretty good job acting as well.
Yeah, that's the craziest part about that deal. It's like, Chris, not once did he break. Not once did we have to reshoot something because he, like, laughed or opened his eyes or anything. He was perfect the whole time, which is unbelievable. Like, for me and Carson, there was 10, 12 times we're like, no, do that again.
Yep.
Chris stayed strong.
The jet ski part was the best, right? Just rolls right off the back.
Yeah, like I said, that was amazing. Was that on a jet ski of yours or, like?
Yeah, that was our little 2008 Sea-Doo. The plan was to, like, cut hard and toss him off the back of the jet ski super hard, but I think we have a broken prop or something to where it doesn't cut or anything, so eventually he just had to fall off when we tried for, like, 10 minutes.
And that's part of the sport right now is entertainment, right? Like, so getting everybody to be involved and to kind of have something that kind of joins us together, and you did a great job with it. And Chris and the Smart Tour do a great job with it. And we're coming up on our first annual Zach Brew Memorial. I know, you know, for me, you know, the King of the Modifieds for you was a huge deal, obviously. But for me, this Zach Brewer Memorial deal is huge because Zach meant a lot to myself and my family. And I hope that, you know, whether it's the trophy, whether it's just the Zach side, I want to get to the point where when you race the Zach Brewer Memorial, you feel like you won something as big as the King of the Modified stuff. It might not be financially the same, but I'm telling you right now that at some point, it might not be this year, but in the future, you're going to want to come and win that Zach Brewer Memorial event. And I think you have a shot at it, obviously, with your team. But it's going to be a stout field. It's always is. Ryan Newman's in there, you know, but you guys always show up and have a shot at winning anytime you show up.
Yeah, no, I like you said, I hope it's, I know it's going to be special for all of us this year just because it's the first one. We all want to go out there and do it for Zach. I didn't know him super well personally. I only talked to him a couple times, but he was always super welcoming in and nice and just an all-around good guy, good race car driver, and just someone you wanted to be around. I've heard a lot of good things about, you know, him and how he treated his family and treated everybody else around him. So it'd be pretty special to win a race in his honor. And I love this racetrack. I've been coming here for a few years and everything about it, how it's two grooves. It's probably the most wore out racetrack on the East Coast. So it's a completely different ballgame when you come here. And I like that. I like the different coming here a couple times a year and it being just a completely different style of race from anywhere else. I thought we had a chance to win it last year. It was my first tour race, so I didn't know how to handle these late race restarts or long green flag runs, but we had a shot at it at the end. That's all I could ask for. So hopefully we can finish a few spots better and take this one on.
Yep. So, for the listeners and the viewers that don't know, much, but like, I want to kind of touch on your grandfather, give us a kind of a background of where the Baldwins came from and how we got to 7VAs and 7NYs.
Yeah, so my grandpa raced up in the Northeast and for years from the late 70s, early 80s, I want to say. My dad grew up in his footsteps working on his cars in the garage. My grandpa won a lot of races up north and a few down south at New Smyrna. Yeah, and he was wild, so I hear a lot of stories about him, and the kind of the legacy of the 7NY my dad's carried on, it's special to kind of do the same thing, but we switched it up a little bit for Sadler Stanley Racing with the Senator of Virginia and Hermie being from Virginia, put the VA on it, because not just that reason, but my dad's bringing Smart Tour cars to the racetrack every now and then. It'll be full-time this year with my brother. So the 7NY will be there. it started off, I ran the 7NC in the Legend car and in the Crate Mon because racing against my brother, we didn't want to have the same number. But now we kind of just don't care. We'll bring the 7NY,
right,
two
of
them, three of them anywhere.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's cool to kind of carry that number.
Yep. So I was fortunate. You know my kids because you guys are all about the same age enough to know that they send you pictures randomly on the, whatever that shit is that you guys do, Snapchat or whatever.
Yeah, I think it was actually shit in the toilet sometime.
Well, you have enough. Well, Kate did that, though. So we watched. I finally found the first North-South shootout race I ran in the Modified. We talked about it a little bit in this this episode. Is your granddad was in that race.
At Concord.
At Concord, the very first one. So when I look at that list, like Teddy Christopher was in there. I qualified eighth, which we'll talk about why I didn't actually start eighth a different time. But Teddy Christopher was in there. But like when I see your granddad's name in there, it's an honor of mine to say that at some point I ran against him because, you know, upstate, like I know you didn't actually officially grow up in upstate, but your dad did. And all the stuff that your family did and my family did is what led us to this table, right? Like, so it's fun to be a part of a family tradition like yourself. That man, your dad did so many cool things with the cup stuff and what he's even doing now. And you know, it's just it's fun to be a part of racing at this point and to be able to do what you're doing. And again, we're super proud of everything you're doing. But at the same time, man, it's just cool to see the Baldwin name continue.
Yeah, no, it's cool to run around with your kids, you know, Owen continuing to race.
Yeah.
Run that 35 for Terry Evans.
That's right, yep.
That's pretty cool, seeing him go through the ranks a little bit now. And Morgan and Leanne, they're great. They're always fun to hang out with. They do a really good job at Florence Motor Speedway. So it's kind of crazy how full circle our families took in the completely different routes and how we all ended up in the same place now. So.
Well, like I said, exactly. So like when I met your dad the first time at Myrtle Beach, he was there with some cars when we ran the Coma Unwind stuff. And just to see it come, like you said, come full circle. It's an honor to be sitting at a table with you and talking to you right now. And I hope you know that as a family and as a racetrack, we're rooting you on. And we hope everything continues in the path that looks like it's going. And we thank you for joining us here on
Royalty,
Tap.
Man. We're in grace with royalty here.
Yeah, sure. Like I said, if you actually go up to Upstate, to his point about what he said about his granddad, my family has the same tradition where you didn't know if you were going to either get beat or get beat by with a jack handle by our family members. So it was a unique time, and it's something I'll never. I wish I could give my kids back in the day when your dad was coming up and your granddad was doing his stuff. Man, that was back when you had to get to the racetrack and you had to put your blankets out first of the day because you didn't know if you're going to lose your seat. And his dad and his granddad had to have A mains and B. We'd go to, like you said, we'd go to, I want to say Florence. Flemington. Yeah, we'd go to Flemington and you had to make a race every time you showed up back in the day. Like in the 80s and 90s, you didn't show up and just made the race. You had to make the race. And you worked your tail off to do it, and people were like, grandstands were full everywhere you went. And racing's not far from that now, but it's not like it was in the 90s.
That's what we need to bring back. You got to have the drivers need to be celebrities.
Oh, for sure.
Like, they got to have a fan base. Like, sports games, when it comes to like football and baseball and basketball, they're crowded because you know who you're pulling for.
Right.
Like, we got to bring back the celebrity aspect of it so drivers have that fan base. I'm pulling for that guy.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think the part that got our families kind of a little bit infamous more than famous is the punching of people, and I'm not a huge fan of that part. Yeah. So it's like,
well, what you said, it's I feel like Flo and the Cars Tour and Smart Tour and all these touring series now, I think they're doing a really good job of trying to bring that celebrity thing back with drivers, like make them more personable, give them an image, stuff like that. So I think they're doing a really good job of that. When you guys bring Dale here or anybody else here, the fans are standing
crazy.
Packed. Great fans. I wanted to be here for the 400, but I had to miss it because I have a trip. I heard that was wild.
Oh yeah,
it was so wild that when he fell out for the fuel pump issue, half the grandstand filled
the place
up.
Cleared out.
They were gone.
Like, all right,
like, see, hey guys, we still got a good race. Like, come on back. Yeah,
it's great seeing you guys.
I believe it. If they could look at the rest of the 40 drivers,
that's right. Yeah.
But you're doing a great job of that, because we need the younger half,
yeah,
to know that there has to be a some sort of persona, there has to be a thing that you're bringing to the table, not just winning races, to bring back the sport to where your granddad was and your dad was, and my family was, is that it needs, and I love you, but I'm not going to put you in this category.
Close your ears. Something's coming.
It needs Richie Evans. Right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
So it needs the people that, like, back in the day, I'm like, we've talked about this on the show. My dad used to spend the off season figuring out how to put cigarette lighters, don't do that, in their car. And Richie Evans, like, he'd drink a beer, he'd go do a thing, but he was a person. Like, he was bigger than a person. He was somebody that everyone was like, man, that is so cool.
And you could relate to it.
You could relate to it. And he was just a racer's racer that wanted to go out there and win races. And, you know, we lost him, obviously, in 82 at Martinsville. But end of day, we don't need that version of Richie Evans. We don't need you out there drinking beer and smoking cigarettes. But we still got to have people that people want
to
follow.
But we got Butterbean, who's going to Waffle House, drinking chocolate.
Yeah, that's right.
I think that's the same thing, but kind of polar opposite.
Of course.
At the same time, like, yep.
Like in your scenario, I think it's a fine line you got to walk, though, because, like, if I was you, I would be like flaunting that crown, that cave. I'm the king of the modifieds. But at the same token, you're going to race against guys like, I'm going to dump his ass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yep. Like, he's going to brag about it, I'm going
to
dump him.
It's not only that. It's like there's a fine line you have to, like, when you're like a type of Butterbean, like when you're on camera all the time and have a lot of eyes on you and you're doing your own thing, you just kind of let loose. You got to be careful, like, with what, like,
of course.
One wrong thing you say, even if you don't mean it the way people are going to interpret it, you're done.
Oh, yeah.
You can't even show your face on camera anymore.
Yeah. Which was opposite of back in the Richie's days, because we didn't have internet. We didn't have social media.
Well, who was it, Stefanik that one time?
Yeah.
He just pissed. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
But that, I think that's why a lot of kids are, like, not necessarily scared, but they don't want to.
Oh, you got to be careful. That's 100%. Yeah. Like, the time's different. Times have changed. Like I said, back in the day, when Richie was doing stuff, man, he didn't care who he hit and how he did it. And I've told Brian this numerous times. I won my first ever race because of a video I watched of Richie Evans. But they would have the open faces and the cigarettes. And like I said, the stuff that even the Cup drivers, back, even Dale Jr., the stuff they used to drive in the day is almost scary.
I've got one of my grandpa's old coupes. I can't remember what year it's from. We've got it in the shop now, and it's like every now and then I walk over, I look in it, I'm like,
how did you survive?
Like, how do you do this?
Yeah. Like back then they were men. Like, we were like, we're badass where we can go run a race. But at the same time, back then, like it used to be glass in the Cup cars. I still go back to Cale Yarborough stuff.
Well, most people nowadays, when you say elbows up, what are you talking about? Because, like, here we're tight. Back then, Go Kill had that elbow all up in the sky.
Cross up.
Yeah.
And back then, Cale Yarborough went to the Hardys, picked up his show car, and said, hey, let's go put this on the pole. And he went and ran the backup car. We can't do that.
No.
Like, a show car. A show car is now a show car.
It's like, all the time, people are like, I don't know how you do it. Like, is it not scary? Like, you got so much courage. I'm like, not at all.
No, not compared to that.
Not one bit. Like, I feel so unbelievably safe in that race.
Oh, yeah.
At all times. Like, unfortunately, like, there's always things that can happen.
No, of course.
Like, I feel, like, so confined and untouched. Like, the thought doesn't even cross my mind.
Yep.
So, like, to look back, I can't imagine what their thoughts are when they're like, they can go like this.
Look out the window. Oh, the seatbelts. I don't even know why we were using seatbelts back then. Like, those things were so loose, like, they didn't mean nothing. Yeah. I tell the story is, I was at Shangri-La one day, and Tioga Speedway, your dad will know that one, is on the front stretch, and a red flag would come out, and it was nighttime. It was like a 7 o'clock race, and the lights were out. You'd look down the front stretch, and it would just be everyone lighting a cigarette. Like, they literally had push button, like the old school push button lighters in the car. Nice. And you look down and they were all just lighting a cigarette and smoke, like, under red flag. They're like, we got it.
It was like the old in-car camera with Dick Trickle just sitting there, arm on a roll bar, cigarette in
hand. It was the same way. Like, J.D. McDuffie with his cigar.
Right.
You know, like, he ran at Tioga Speedway the night before he passed away. But they said when he passed away, he was smoking a cigar.
Yep.
Just having a good time, man.
Well, it's got to be like where they cross the line, where nowadays safety innovation is taking us to the next level, obviously.
Yep.
But back then, like, I'm flirting with disaster anyways. Yep. Something's going to kill me. Why not this?
So strangely, that actually used to be my favorite part about getting in the car, is I didn't know if I was coming back out of it. You know what I mean? Like,
it's a risk.
The badass part about, like, strapping in and not knowing This could be it.
Called like, the chicks dig it, right? That's what they say, yeah.
Well, the chicks dig it, but mine is singular.
Oh, yeah.
Jacqueline dug it. That was all I had. So, right. But it, anyways. But no, it's cool. We love racing. I think all of our traditions are important. The Baldwin, the Zacharias, the Voss, anyone that gets in a car and shows up at a racetrack is a big deal.
For sure.
And we're excited to have the Smart Tour coming. And Luke, we appreciate you joining us here on tap. And we look forward to seeing you here in a couple weeks.
Of course, I'm excited. I think we tested a little bit today. I think we had a really good race car. So hopefully we'll have a shot at it.
Sounds awesome. Like a redemption race.
Yeah.
Bringing it back.
Yeah.
Hope so.
All right. We'll see you on the other side on tap. How about that? We had a chance to talk to Luke Baldwin.
Luke Superstar, Baldwin. Man.
Oh, yeah.
Them videos they do.
King of the Modifieds.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that part.
And man. Also possibly the person that watered down the mansion in Martinsville.
Yeah, but, may or may not got an answer there.
Yeah, we're uncertain. It still remains a mystery. Actually, you know what was crazy last night? So I usually go to bed to Forensic Files. And somehow, the other night, I ended up going to Unsolved Mysteries.
Ooh.
Like 1980s
stuff. That's a good one.
And now that I think about it...
Can't think of his name, but he was also in the movie Airplane.
Yes.
Yeah. God, he was good.
Well, also in Basketball.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, yep.
Because Unsolved Mysteries.
Which also had Dale Earnhardt in it.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I'll get you there.
Sorry. But, yeah, so... Anyways, Luke Baldwin joined us, getting ready for the Zach Brewer Memorial. We talked a little bit about that. That's our next event, March 1st. For Florence Motor Speedway, anyways. And then from there, season's on, man. We just start doing our first and third Saturdays of the month. Our schedule's out. Florence Motor Speedway in full swing come March 1st after the modifieds are here. Super unique. We've been fortunate. We were an early part of the Smart Tour as an opening race. When Chris started all of that stuff, he called and asked if we wanted to be a part of modifieds. And Brian knows for a long time I've begged to have modifieds because that's just my background. That's where I grew up.
The very first icebreaker, I believe, they were on the bill.
Yep. The Coma Unwinds.
Coma Unwinds,
which,
yeah.
Who was your winner then?
Zach Brewer.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yep.
That's
so it. Zach Brewer won Myrtle Beach in the Coma Unwinds first ever race. Him and his dad were out back in
that's
a
right.
single trailer in the 31, which stay tuned, hopefully is showing up for nice. This event to honor Zach. So, you know, a lot of cool things, but I love the modifieds. If you've never seen a modified or I know I'm currently, my job is to get Brian in a late model at Martinsville, but, I'm telling you right now, like I've wanted to figure out a way to get Brian to just drive a modified one time. They're just so much fun. Like they're completely different than the late model stock stuff. Between the speed, the horsepower stuff, the tires, the brakes, but that's just what I've known. My grandfather was driving them in the 50s when they were coupes, all the way until my dad started running them, my uncles, and then myself in 1999, 2000, because I ran street stocks, and I'm trying to do the math in my head. I think it was 99 or 2000. I ran my first modified, brought it to Charlotte, ran the Smart Tour when it was in its infancy of with Randy Myers. And I went to Myrtle Beach with it one time. Went to Concord, which is my favorite
North-South shootout and all?
North-South shootout. That was my favorite one. Went to South Boston. Ran South Boston there. So they're just a ton of fun. Totally different. You know, they haven't really changed much over the years, you know, visually. Like, you know, when my dad was running those coupes, they were looked completely different. But about in the Richie Evans time frame in the mid-80s, they kind of started to make a look, or they became a certain look. And I was noticing today, I was showing Joel, like the head bars that they have now. They have like roll bars that, like a double bar that holds. So they got the seat, but then they have two bars now. Other than that, the rest of the car looks the same as I remember it.
So the halo area.
Yeah, the halo area. Gotcha. So where a late model would have the A and the B post, where the B post would be its roll bars, you know, to keep their
heads. I think the competitors probably appreciate that. Why we see the southern region growing more and more each year. Because the late models, we'll say, every year there's something new.
Right.
It never breaks, but the new bodies and new engine combinations. Every year they're just adding financial cost to it. Where modifies, they stay consistent, and you keep seeing them grow more and more in this region.
Yep. So I told Joel the story, like the head bar I told you about kind of intrigues me because in the early 90s, my dad, he spun out off a four, and he hit his head against the wall, because back then all you had was like a aluminum, just basically something to keep your head from going this way. That's all it was there for. It wasn't to keep your head from the wall. Yeah, it was flimsy.
Yeah.
And then we had a seat buckle welded to a rod. So you went to a junkyard, you cut an old seat buckle out. And
I'm sure, did he even have one on the left? Because I remember for the longest, you only had just the one buckler built one on the right.
Pretty sure he had one on the left.
He did.
But then he had the seat buckle, and when he went, got spun by his brother, or his brother started it up front, he got caught up and it got spun. When he went just flush, and he hit his head against the wall, split his helmet right down the middle. And for you folks out there that have had a chance to meet my dad,
explains the mood.
Yeah, it makes
that
sense.
Makes sense.
The mood changes. It makes sense now.
Yeah. But flashbacks. I'm going to get on you now. Yeah.
But no, excited about the modified. It's going to be a great race. Always is. You know, this track we've talked about puts on good racing no matter what kind of vehicles they are. It's always fun with them, though. Like the first year, I think I got super frustrated because they went out for their qualifying run? And
yeah,
them
guys take tire saving to the extreme.
They went like 42nd laps.
In qualifying.
Yeah, and then they only ran one.
Yeah.
And then came in. I'm like, they're like, no, we got to save tires. I'm like, you don't got to save tires. And then Hirschman went out there, and I believe it was
Bobby Labonte set their track record that time, right?
Yeah, that's
I think
time.
He qualified on the pole.
I was thinking about it. It was the Jet. Tomaino went out there and lapped the field. And mind you, he did get passed afterwards, so maybe they might have
You're banking on that caution. It's got to come. It's got to come.
But, no, it's just fun to watch them try to figure out what it means.
I always say, you always should take a little piece of weight, and whoever your rival is, put their car number on it. If you don't think the camera's on, you just chunk it out.
Yep.
Yeah, it came off that car. I saw it happen.
Yep.
Black flag him.
But it's going to be a great race. It's going to be a great season. A lot of cool stuff. We talked about it numerous times. The URA stuff we're doing, the ultra broadcasting stuff we're doing, the crews we're doing, the stuff we're doing with Mike and Southern National and the other tracks, Lakeview. So just stay tuned because Brian and I don't quit. So when it comes to making sure we're giving, whether you watch it or not, we're giving you the best product and the best content and the best stuff, whether it's on track or it's on the internet. I promise you, Brian and I are going to give you 110% every time we do this. So excited that we made it to episode 5. We've talked about it in a couple of the podcasts. I've tried numerous podcasts, and this is the farthest we've made it.
There's now a podcast coming out that NASCAR is doing, the behind-the-scenes, the officials. You're not going to tell us that it's coming from this. I mean, come on.
Yeah, no
we know it had to.
No different than Denny Hamlin's bracket challenge.
While we make our calls.
Seems super similar very
great
to
timing.
Daytona 1 Beach Madness. But,
yeah.
But we're glad you joined us. Hopefully we stayed within the time frame we've been trying to live. We thank Luke Baldwin for coming up and taking a few minutes with us here on tap. And we look forward to seeing you guys next week, episode 6 on tap. Thank you for joining us.